evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. Tonight we're going to focus on a newly released anthology called Still Going Strong, memoirs, stories, and poems about great older women. And I actually have three great older women with me this evening. I want to introduce Amalia Weinberg. She's the vision behind as well as the editor for Still Going Strong. She has a PhD in psychology from Columbia University and became a founding member of the First Feminist Therapy Collective. Her short stories have appeared in numerous publications, including West Wind Review. Catherine Howd Mahon is a professor in the writing department at Ithaca College. Her poems have appeared in dozens of magazines and in 24 collections. In 2002, she was named the first poet laureate of Tompkins County. And Rochelle Siegel is a retired psychiatric social worker, writer, and lecturer. She has been a co-editor of several books about women in therapy and has written numerous professional articles. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
I want to begin with you, Amalia. I want to talk about why did you decide to compile this collection and why now?
Well, I started to see that I was becoming an older woman myself, and I didn't like the way our culture typified me and other women my age. And as an old women's movement member, I knew the power of stereotypes, not only to reflect what people are, but to help shape us. And I did not want to become what our culture was telling me I was about to become. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to change stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Improve them.
And my understanding is that you placed an ad in Poets and Writers
Correct.
Magazine, so that does give you a limited audience. Was that okay with you?
Well, it was the best magazine that I knew of, and it did give me a limited audience. This is the first book I've done this way, and I didn't think about that at the time. I realized that after I got the contributions. And did try to get some more afterwards, but I didn't get very much more. So it's mainly middle class, academics, that type of
audience.
That's
what I noticed, yeah. And it's women from 50 to 92 is my understanding, right?
Correct, yes.
That's an amazing age range, at least.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you only ask for positive contributions?
Yes.
You did. And what was the reasoning behind that?
We have enough negative. We know the negative.
Uh-huh. So you wanted only to portray the positive sides of aging because we hear so much about...
Well, I wanted to deal with the difficulties also, but in a positive way. I mean, every stage of life has difficulties, and the aim is to deal with them with strength and to learn from them, and in old age as well, to face the challenges in a strong way. So I didn't want to leave that out. I just wanted to show how it was possible to handle these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rochelle, I wanted to ask you, you've written quite a bit about women and aging. Do you think attitudes have really changed through the last 30, 40 years since the second wave of the women's movement?
Well, I think among many of us, attitudes have changed. And still, there's a long ways to go. I now do some workshops and take courses at Lifelong, our local senior center. And it's just absolutely wonderful what positive approaches just pervade that entire agency.
Mm-hmm.
But there still are an awful lot of misconceptions.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Catherine? Do you think attitudes have changed quite a bit in the last 30, 40 years?
Well, I think that folks like us are certainly helping to make them change. I'm a fellow of the Gerontology Institute at Ithaca College. And as such, teach a course every week at Longview in belly dancing. And if you want to talk about breaking stereotypes and the people who come past and watch us and then take a double take and a triple take with a little bit of longing involved, I think things are changing.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And in what way? Name some ways. I mean, older women are not thought of as... over the hill anymore, for instance, do you think? Are they being portrayed better in the media as well?
I think that older age is... It used to be seen as an end, as just the opposite of everything that was valued.
Which was youth, right?
Which was youth. Mm-hmm. And now it's becoming another stage of life. with its own benefits and its own lessons and its own challenges. And people are living into older age in a much healthier way with a lot of vitality. This has never been this way before. Mm-hmm. So it's a really new stage.
Mm-hmm. So this book is in part one of the media pushes, just like everything else,
yes,
to portray women, especially in a more, mm-hmm, a more positive light. What about this age-adverse culture, though? I mean, you can't look at a magazine or see a TV show where you're not seeing, mm-hmm, some ad about age-enhancing surgery. I mean, age,
right,
getting rid of age lines and so on.
I think there are two things happening. One is older people are beginning to realize and to demonstrate that they can do what younger people do. And, you know, we can have adventures, we can have romances, we can start new jobs. And that's the aspect that seems the clearest right now. Everybody's showing they can stay young. Mm-hmm. And that really isn't changing the attitudes about aging. It's just showing we can stay young longer. And the other line...
Or at least young looking, right?
Yes. Yeah. But the other line is to begin to explore and articulate what's good about getting old. And this is taking a little longer. Mm-hmm. It's harder for this culture to recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you all feel wiser as you've gone through the 40s and into the 50s, 60s?
I absolutely feel a lot better at this stage. Mm-hmm. I feel stronger. I feel more confident. I don't have to do all my old numbers anymore. You know, after you've done them three or four decades, you get tired of them.
Yeah.
You're never too old to learn. That's.
I think that's what keeps people young.
And I think that's what we keep doing. As we age, we're confronted with new challenges that we've never had to face before, and we need to invent new ways of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And old is not a dirty word. We equate old with ill and decrepit,
and
youth is equated with health, and that's a mistake.
Yeah. I actually come from the epicenter of fear of aging. I'm from Southern California.
So
it really is. It's the epicenter of, they are so freaked out about anybody showing any kind of age, which is so absurd.
Well, really, if you think about it, the language of young old being somehow positive, negative, if we could just put that aside and think in terms of the word vital.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why does it have to have anything to do with the number of years?
Uh-huh. And I find, as I've gotten older as well, that I don't feel like I have to prove as much, which mm-hmm. is really mm-hmm. a nice feeling. You don't have to go out there and get all freaked out about whether you're measuring up to people. You know, there is a confidence. If one's going to become confident, it seems to come with age.
I think older age has different needs and different values that we don't recognize. The middle age and younger age, you've got to prove something, and you've got to accomplish and show what you can do. When you get to past that, you can be what you are,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and you can begin to feel more comfortable with yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is not recognized as a value in our culture. So if you do that, if you do start to feel good about where you are and aren't driven anymore, at this point, you still wonder, you know, is that all right?
Yeah.
Whereas, in fact, when I was younger, that's where I wanted to get. I wanted to reach that stage of some kind of inner peace. Mm-hmm. And now it's seeming more possible, you know.
Mm-hmm. You Rochelle and you, Amalia, are examples of people who actually reinvented yourselves at an mm-hmm. older age. Mm-hmm. When a lot of people think, oh, my God, we're not going to start something new now. But you went back and got a PhD when you were in your 40s, didn't
I got
you, Rochelle?
A master's when I was 50.
Wow. Hmm. That's amazing. Did people try to talk you out of it and say, oh, you're too old for that?
Well, Cornell did, but Syracuse University did not.
Is that so?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's amazing.
I explored a graduate program at Cornell, and they said, well, we don't usually even look at people over 45.
Hmm.
I hope they've changed.
Oh, I would hope so, too.
But Syracuse University was very welcoming.
And I thought that, I think that's a pretty brave thing to start a whole new life, in fact, at that advanced, in this culture age, you know.
Well, I've read some studies where more and more people are not thinking of retirement as an end. But it's either they think they're going to continue doing what they're doing or they're going to do something brand new.
And you know what? This is a question for all three of you, because I think this is an interesting. When did you yourselves start thinking of yourselves as older women? At what age and why? Who wants to start? Catherine?
Well, I haven't quite gotten to that place at age 53, but I will say that when I turned 35, I declared myself middle-aged and said, I'm just going to reinvent it and make it go on a fairly long time. I think maybe for my 70th birthday, I will perhaps claim the word elderly.
Well, I think the line between middle age and old age is moving up as we speak. You know, it was 55, then 60. Now it's around 65. I'm 64, and I feel like I'm at the edge. I'm not
between middle age and
I'm at the border, just about maybe 1 foot in.
Yeah, I think that, too, about people in their 60s.
I started doing research on women in their 60s when I was in my 60s, and I called it between midlife and old age. And I found that it was a tremendous transitional period where people were reexamining their lives and making new decisions. And, of course, a lot of it, we have to remember, has to do with economic security, at least.
I was going to bring that up.
If you don't have the means, it's awfully hard to reinvent yourself.
Exactly.
I was going to bring up the fact that, I mean, we can surmise that getting older is much more of a challenge for somebody who's living in poverty, somebody who hasn't had an education, or, you know.
And health issues, of course.
Absolutely.
We're talking with the word vitality. It has in it that sense of health. Is your health where it can be?
What lessons have you guys learned from reading this book and contributing to this book? Has it changed your attitudes at all?
It's been wonderful since the book came out to have different audiences respond and lots of different ages of people, all the way from late teens into, I don't know who the oldest listener we've had is, perhaps in her 80s, I would think. And the kinds of stories that they're eager to tell about also being women, if they're young, they're thinking about what their future is. If they're old, they're saying, well, isn't that great? Look, I mean, this book is celebrating who I have become.
I keep using the title, Still Going Strong. It's just part of my vocabulary now.
That's a good one.
I think it's wonderful.
Amalia, while you were getting submissions for this anthology, did you notice any differences in attitudes in different parts of the country?
No, I didn't.
Really?
I was
thinking maybe big city as opposed to rural.
I have a pretty big variety, I'd say. I have a cluster in Florida, a cluster in the Bay Area in California. New England was a cluster. A couple of people scattered around the Midwest, one in Alaska, New York, quite a... Well, maybe I didn't have any farm people, I think.
Yeah, they probably don't read Poets and Writers magazine. They don't have time trying to keep a farm going, I would think. I was thinking, I wonder if there is a difference. You know, like the red and blue states. We do try to put everything in boxes and categories.
I didn't get enough variety to notice that.
And did you accept things as they were, or did you send them back and have people polish things if you thought they had promise?
It spanned that whole range. There were quite a few that were just perfect the way they were. Some needed a little bit. Some needed practically all rewriting. And I like the story. I like the idea. And they were not that experienced writers. And so I worked with them to practically redo the story.
Oh, that's great. So that gives more voice to people who aren't professional writers.
Yeah, there were some people. It was the first publication for them.
That's one of the wonderful things about this collection, Amalia, is that there is that kind of freshness. It's not full of people who have been publishing a long time. It's a venue for new, good voices.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and we're talking about the new anthology, Still Going Strong. I want to ask Amalia, would you read something for us?
Sure. This is an excerpt from a piece called A Different Woman. It's a memoir by Joan Kipp. She's talking about a relationship that began after the death of her husband. Meeting Seth in a cafe felt too formal, so I suggested we have tea at my house instead. Together, we sat at the dining room table talking about art, that was her husband, and as I studied Seth's face, I felt the old attraction, coupled with an uneasy excitement stir within me. The conversation turned to Seth's concern about my life without art and how I would manage living alone. Would I remain in the house? Were my children around and supportive? As we talked, my despair, as though by design, moved silently into the shadows, and in its place I found an old theme being replayed. No longer hidden in ambiguity, I came face to face with my sexual longing for this man alongside me. During the next 6 months, Seth came for tea a couple of times, and each time I lost more of my initial uneasiness. In September, I invited him to dinner. As I stood preparing hors d'oeuvres in the kitchen, waiting for his arrival, a mix of aloneness and excitement flooded through me, and I longed for art to protect me from myself. Sensing the dynamics of the evening would be different, I opened the door to Seth with some trepidation. I knew I was sailing into uncharted waters. A glass of red wine steadied my fears, and as Seth and I chatted over dessert, I had the distinct physical sensation of expanding into a looser space, of tossing overboard a layer of baggage which had outlived its time. Later, listening to music upstairs in the living room, our conversation more intimate, Seth spoke about his two brief unhappy marriages and his pleasure in the company of women. In turn, I emphasized the blessedness of my years with art, adding that I had no intention of ever marrying again, though perhaps I'd take a lover sometimes. It was a calculated remark, and Seth's quick rejoinder was to the point. "Let's take off our clothes," he ventured. Caught in a web of my own design and my mind sounding its familiar warnings, I panicked. Hoping to find an easy exit, I looked into Seth's face, but saw only impassivity and his lingering question. Playing for time, I got up from the couch, walked across the room, and switched off the music. Then my heart moved to the rescue. "Let's," I replied, turning back to Seth. Downstairs in the bedroom, it was more than my clothes I took off. I also let go of a script written by a triad of enforcers. 20th century middle-class England, where sex was a blushingly dirty word, my parents, whose sexual war games bruised my innocence, and finally, but perhaps most importantly, my conforming self, who had learned to bury her sexuality under a colossus of shame. Art and I loved and trusted each other for 52 years, and our lovemaking was a shared delight. Yet we both knew part of me was hiding and still feared my mother's mantra, quote, "To trust your love to a man is the quickest path to abandonment," unquote, she used to say. After I lost art, the terrible grief that burst through all my withholdings liberated parts of myself I'd never known. At the age of 80, I met them.
Oh, that's great. That's a subject, too, that isn't being talked about a lot, women and sexuality mm-hmm. in regard to being older.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's terrific.
And the greater openness that comes with
mm-hmm.
age.
Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. one is more comfortable
yes, yeah.
with oneself, yeah. I would assume. Catherine, would you like to read us a poem?
Oh, I'd love to. This poem is dedicated to my good friend Jackie Ferretti, who in her early 60s is still dancing with our troupe Mirage Belly Dancers of Ithaca. Cane. In sparkling velvet, blue a hint throughout, she takes the stage, her hip a thrust of knife through bread and bone, as drumbeat brings about rich transformation, only fullest life can make real breath and truest reach. No young embrace of this long art can give so much, however dexterous and deft among applauding crowds. It takes a seasoned touch, to ripple through the air of time and move an audience to know the why and when of how they've come to live and deeply love the yes of saying yes, despite again. She carries us in arc of curving gold as music celebrates a new word, old.
That's great. I love it. Love it. Rochelle, would you like to read us something?
May morning in the winter of my life. Gains and losses, joys and sorrows. Life is not a financial ledger. At the end, there will surely be unfinished business and much that cannot be quantified or even fully understood. My friend Jane called me this morning. Now that we live far apart, we send each other funny emails, loving messages, and we talk once or twice a year by phone. Jane told me that she feels blessed with the people in her life who mean so much to her, some of whom she had known only briefly. I echoed her feelings, for I, too, feel deeply blessed by our relationship and the many, many individuals who have in some way touched my life and those who have become so dear to me. Jane, like me, lives alone. We both proudly acclaim our 80th birthdays this year. As seasons go, we are both in the winter of our lives. She has survived many hardships, many losses. She lives in a wheelchair, and yet she feels blessed. I told her that she is doubly blessed for being able to celebrate and count her blessings. I am not always capable of doing that when the going gets tough, when pains and sorrows accumulate. Sometimes loneliness sets in too deep, and the warmest, fullest memories can no longer give me pleasure or relief. I may see my life half empty when I can no longer perform my previous roles or do the things I've loved to do. There are times when even the most caring encounters cannot make up for an overwhelming sense of loss. I have grieved and sorrowed. I have fretted over my imperfections. I listen to world news with anger and despair. But on this beautiful May morning, waking up to my friend's clear voice and loving words, my life feels full and I feel blessed. I rejoice in remembering the challenges and rewards of my work, the wondrous encounters with each of the women and men of all ages who have been and continue to be part of my life, for even the ones who have died will always be present in my soul. Yes, I feel blessed indeed. I know with certainty that there will be more joys, more sorrows. The gains and losses will not balance out, not now or ever, but I shall name the blessings while I can.
Lovely. And what a nice message to feel blessed for what you have. Yeah, lovely. Did you find yourselves, all of you, feeling more blessed about friendships and family as you get older as well?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to have taken the time to actually maintain and nurture friendships is what I actually find really rewarding too as I get older.
I think for me, I've learned a lot about improving relationships. Don't sweat the small stuff. Mm. Gotten past some of the hurdles, some of the inevitable strife and pulling and tugging that we have in families.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I find more acceptance of myself and of others. And I'm more open. I feel I can be touched and touch more.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the fears are gone, you know?
Yeah, I actually have heard people say that, and that's a blessing.
Yes.
Well, when one
yeah.
can say that, because yeah. that's not always the case as one gets older, especially if one isn't healthy, like we were talking about, or living in poverty. Or
yeah.
Well, what about you, Catherine?
Well, I think I'm still looking a little towards that part of my mm-hmm. life, given mm-hmm. that I'm still raising two teenagers.
Oh, that's you shouldn't even be in this analogy.
Well, you know, it's a matter of celebrating the folks who are in that elderly state.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of looking towards becoming as wise a woman as possible.
Uh-huh. Do you think the feminist movement has a lot to do with these attitudes? Do you guys all consider yourselves part of the feminist movement, or having grown up?
I think this
grown
is
up
a continuation or an extension. We were the women's movement,
mm-hmm.
and back then they told us that we weren't important and that we were weak, and you know what we did with that.
Oh, absolutely.
And now they're telling us the same thing again, now because we're old, not just because we're women, but now because we're old women. And, you know, we're not stopped by that kind mm-hmm. of stereotypes anymore.
Mm-hmm. Remember when Gloria Steinem had to defend herself when she turned 40? Remember, she said, this is what 40 looks like. People were going, you look so good. This is what 40 looks like. Remember that?
She still does, actually.
I tell people, this is what 80 looks like.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And one of the joys is watching my children are now middle-aged.
Mm.
And watching my children and grandchildren going into later stages of life that feel very different than when I did.
Mm-hmm.
I think the women's mm-hmm. movement has had a tremendous impact.
Mm-hmm.
And not making everything easier,
right.
Perhaps more complicated, mm-hmm. but still opening up an awful lot of doors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In my teens, as I was emerging as a feminist, my first job was in a home for the aged. And I'd have to say a role model for me that helped shape my feminism was a 93-year-old woman that I had long conversations with.
Wow, that will change you, absolutely. Michelle, you were born and raised until you were a teen in Germany, correct?
Yeah, until age six.
Oh, till six. Okay.
And then in Switzerland.
Okay, because I was wondering, do you think the attitudes in Europe are different about aging? Because I do. I lived in the Netherlands for a while, and it seems more accepted.
It depends on, in different cultures, mm-hmm. old people are more respected, mm-hmm. more revered.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to generalize. I don't know enough. I know that my sister lives in Israel, and there certainly elders are very much respected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is still mm-hmm. a young culture that we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
We have to face the fact that the USA is really kind of a young soul country.
In another 4 years, there's going to be more people over 45 than under 45, and so it's not going to be a young culture anymore. And I think some of the values of maturity are going to start seeping into the culture and changing things, so mm-hmm. hopefully for the better.
Did you find any surprises as you were compiling this anthology? Mm. Were you surprised by how many positive stories you got?
No.
Really? And no surprises at all, huh?
I was surprised by how many writers submitted stories that were so many good works to their credit already, that they're still looking for the little ads in the magazine to submit their stories. People with very long credentials and teachers and professors of English and writing, that sort of thing. I didn't expect that quality. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd have to do a lot more editing.
Really? Hmm. Do you plan on doing another book, right? Are you going to take a different perspective?
I don't know yet. I'm not at the stage where it's defined. I like the process of doing this, but I have to be finished with this before I see what the next one will be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost running out of time. Any new works for you, Catherine, on the horizon? I know you're quite a poet and quite well known in this community. Any new books coming out or anything?
Well, I'm continuing to write monologues of my Red Wing series, many of which are in the voices of elderly women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Rochelle? Any new writings?
I'm taking a writing course at Longview at Lifelong with Irene Zahava.
Oh yeah.
And writing personal little essays and compiling them. I've also written a children's story. I had a female peacock land on my roof last summer, and so I wrote a children's story about it.
I think you better write something about that.
Looking for an illustrator and a publisher. So I'm still having fun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, the book Still Going Strong, Memoirs, Stories, Poems About Great Older Women is available in bookstores now, and I want to thank all three of you for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls.
Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.